Begins with a play in the Douglas Elementary Auditorium. The play reenacts the worm rising out of the river as a tiny eel, then growing into a monster. A stilted narrator from the fourth grade describes the horrors of the worm in a robotic voice, while three kids in a worm costume rampage across the stage. The two kids in the back can't see where they're going, and the kid in the front doesn't have much interest in following the stage direction they'd practiced. The other kids, dressed as pioneers and farm animals, have to hurry in front of the charging worm, only to fall to the side, clutching their stomachs, dramatically feigning their deaths. But one clever mayor found a way to pacify the worm. He fed the worm milk, and the worm liked it. The worm leaves the town alone as long as it gets its milk. The kids left standing on stage give a half-hearted hooray! As the worm kids stumble over the bucket, which is thankfully not actually full of milk. Some of the pioneer kids laugh, even some who are pretending to be deceased. The narrator turns bright red at this embarrassing level of unprofessionalism. The kids take off the worm costume and look around blinking with their hair all mussed. And the kids on the ground rise for their bows, and the audience of parents applauds. Upset that the ending of the play has been ruined, the narrator asks his mom if they can go straight home. Clips of the play are spliced into the news story on Channel 5, as is an interview with a fourth grader who's still dressed like a pioneer and now standing in the busy hallway. He has to speak loudly over the commotion of parents and students in the background. My part in the play is the mayor who figured out that the worm likes milk and won't kill people if it gets enough milk to drink. I like my part because I get to play a hero. Every table in the cafeteria is covered in art projects. Every kid drew a picture of the worm in crayon or paint. Or they made a sculpture out of clay, the white glaze uneven across the beast's tube-like body. Overbright red paint got away from the kids across the beast's mouth and claws. You get a lot of crying kids, said Miss Thompson, the art teacher. She laughs. Almost nobody likes the way their worm turns out. It's almost as bad as doing tie-dye with the kids. It's a big part of my job to reassure them that I can see their white crayon on the white paper, and the blood they added didn't ruin it. The hallway between the auditorium and the cafeteria is lined with class and small group presentations. The kids stand before their projects, like at the science fair that's 4 months away, and they excitedly explain their projects to any adult who pauses before them. The first graders focus mostly on anatomy. How long is 300 feet? What other animals can regrow limbs after those limbs have been removed? Here's a cast of one of the worm's claws. When it sits on the ground, the claw comes up to most of the first graders' chins, and they're laughing at a game where they pop up on their toes to balance their chins on claw point. One of the third grade classes has a display. How much is 40 gallons of milk? It's an important question, as that's how much milk is required to keep the worm satisfied. 40 gallons every day. They have a rectangle of milk jugs balanced on top of each other and held in place with glue. It's 8 milk jugs wide and 5 milk jugs tall, and it's propped against the wall. The kids started collecting milk jugs 6 weeks ago, and the lessons stretched to talking about volume and recycling and calcium intake, as well as learning about the worm. Assembling the milk jug structure turned out to be more fraught than Miss Kepler was expecting, but the final result is dramatic. Joan Weaver is proudly admiring a trifold poster with several pictures of herself on it. She works for the Department of Worm Activities, and a group of fifth graders interviewed her for their project. It's Joan's job to buy milk twice a week from Costco. There are two guys at the store, one there on Monday and one there on Thursday, who know her and help her load up the Department of Worm Activities van. She has to unload it back at headquarters by herself, but she doesn't mind much. She has a dolly. She loads it all into the walk-in refrigerator and then doesn't think about it again until the next time she goes to the store. It's not her job to take the milk to the worm. It's her job to make sure the funds and the milk keep flowing. She spends most of her time in an office, handling the department's finances. And by the time she next opens the walk-in, the delivery people will have depleted the stores. "I think it's great that the kids are learning about this," she tells Channel 5. "There are a lot of people who work hard behind the scenes to keep everything running and everyone safe." Another of the fifth grade groups did their report on the three watchtowers that circle Worm Hill. "We went to visit one of the watchtowers, and there are these big windows that the guards look out to make sure the worm isn't moving anywhere it shouldn't," says Cameron Jay. "If the worm moves, they have a big button that they hit that makes the siren noise go off, and that calls in the police and the fire department. We got to hear them test it. It's real loud." Cameron mimics the loud, high-pitched wail, which can be heard in the distance the first Tuesday of every month. "It was way less scary than we thought it would be. The guards said the worm doesn't move around much, and they spend most of their time watching Netflix." And this is part of the controversy around Worm Day. Is Douglas Elementary teaching the kids how to stay safe from our local monster, and the steps the town has taken to ensure the population's well-being? Or does Worm Day end up celebrating the monster that plagues our town and lull kids into a false sense of security? Channel 5 shows a group of smaller children in worm costumes, running around, roaring at one another and laughing. "It's disrespectful," says Merrill Hodgkins of the Douglas Historical Society, whose grandfather was one of the people who fought against the worm in the Battle of 1947. She gives an interview from her office at the Historical Society. "The town has become exceptionally good at appeasing the worm. Since we haven't had a major incident in 26 years, it's easy to mistake the success of the precautions in place for a lack of danger. People have forgotten just how terrifying the worm can be. They've forgotten the history and turned it into a fun field day. Instead of acting as a warning or a public service announcement for children, Worm Day has turned the creature into a local attraction. People are almost proud of it." Some, on the other hand, think that Worm Day is too traumatic for children. The fourth graders have focused their projects on important events in worm history, most of which are, of course, violent. "I mean," says Shia Brooks, mother of Aaliyah Brooks, "she came home with this old black and white photo of four guys standing around a severed worm leg. She's 9. She doesn't need to be exposed to that." Daryl Scholl agrees. "My kid came home upset one day because he heard a story at school about the one time when the milk delivery was late and the worm came down the hill and ate a bunch of sheep. He was worried that what if the milk delivery is late again? Will the worm eat us? And then he wanted to go help the delivery guys. Like, maybe if they had help from a fourth grader, they'd be sure to do their job right." So I guess it's teaching civic engagement? I don't know. If they're going to do Worm Day, they should really have something set up so the kids can volunteer if they need to. If that's what they need to feel safe. But some parents are less upset. "No, I'm not mad about it," says Angela Brine. "Yeah, my kid came home and told me, 'Today we learned what disembowel means.'" She laughs. "But if it puts the fear of God into them, then good. There's a horrible dragon monster that could come down the hill any day and kill us all. I just can't lie to her about that. I think parents who don't want their children to know aren't protecting their kids. They're protecting themselves because they're too afraid to have hard conversations." "It is hard," says third grade teacher Miss Lee. "Just like with any scary subject, some kids are going to take it really hard and some kids are going to turn it into a big joke. It's tough to really impress the seriousness of the situation on some of the kids. Really drill it in that this is something dangerous. Especially when I'm trying to soften the blow for some of the more sensitive students." When asked if this is a discussion that should be left up to parents, Miss Lee says, "I think it should be both. The school has the resources to give the kids more facts. Most parents don't know about its biology or how the Department of Worm Activities works or the history of our town's interaction with the worm. But this discussion certainly needs to continue at home. Only parents can answer the really hard questions." Like what? Comes the unmiked question from behind the camera. Like, says Miss Lee, why do we live here? From Channel 5 News, I'm Tammy Spice. The 20% True podcast was written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahaman. Music was composed by Kamiku. If you like the show, please be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts so other people can discover it. Follow the show on Facebook at facebook.com/20percenttrue. Visit my website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. And follow me on Twitter at CarrieMTheHits.